Last time with Daniel, we started with the question, why have you invented your own license? And this time we continue by asking the question, what about software patents? So let's start in the awkward end and continue the summer special with Daniel Steenberg of Curl.
There are no patent clauses in the license. So any thoughts on that?
Patents are, of course, annoying, and I stay away as far as possible from all or everything that is patents.
But you refuse to answer.
I actually was once contacted years ago, maybe 20 years ago, by an American lawyer because there was one of these, you know, stupid patent cases in the U.S. where someone said, "I have a patent for resuming a transfer." So they were suing, 25 big time software companies in the U.S. And one of them who were sued used Curl to resume transfers. But I don't know where it ever happened to that lawsuit. So, and there were prior art for that. Zmodem back in the days already did it long before this patent. So no, I don't have much to say about patents. We try to avoid. I don't want to infringe any patents, of course, but then I don't read up on it. I don't bother myself about them. No. Nobody else is either in the project that I know of.
And I suppose nowadays in web technologies, most of the things developed are developed in the open without patents. But it's hard to know, of course.
Exactly. Yeah. And in a lot of the standard bodies that produce the protocols and standards, they have mechanisms to make sure that everything that is made into the general protocol is not encumbered with any known patents, at least.
There may be a couple of questions around the project. So you produce these graphs over the number of contributors. How many are you now? It's hundreds, isn't it? Or is it in the thousands?
We're in the thousands. So contributors to Curl, I count anyone who ever basically said anything that went into the project, which means if you reported a bug, you proposed something that we then did, or you reviewed a code or anything. And we're a little bit over 2,200 names in that list. I've also, over the time, I also add usernames on GitHub because it's for a long time, I tried to just use people's names, but for some reason, people like their pseudonyms and weird user 1234 on GitHub. So I nowadays refer to, if they don't have any real name, their user 1234 on GitHub. So yeah, we have 2,200 contributors, and then we, of course, count authors in Git as well, and we're at 811 authors, I think.
Wow.
Which is a fascinating amount. So we're over 100 first-time committers per year now.
That's amazing.
How many stars do you have on GitHub?
17K or so.
Ooh, cool. The K made it. I was worried.
17, I heard.
17K, I don't know.
But I mean, you've started working with Wolf SSL.
Yes.
And I guess you spend most of your time on Curl.
Yes.
Have you sort of changed anything around the project, or is it just that you code daytime, or are you just off daytime and then code nighttime still, or?
So now I can work on Curl during work hours and night hours. So yes, I spend a lot of time doing Curl nowadays. So yes, I think it has changed things a little bit. Well, first, I can be even more nimble and react to things when it happens, since I work with Curl all day anyway. So now I can respond to, you know, bug reports or things happening even better than before. And of course, it changes a little bit since I'm doing this and I charge customers for Curl support, which means that those who pay me, of course, have a priority here. So if I have problems that a paying customer is getting, they, of course, will probably have a higher priority than anyone else's, depending a little bit on the situation, of course. So, and then I'm also struggling a little bit, and I'm playing, I don't know if you've seen it, but I'm playing and toying a little bit. I have a patch set on top of curl that I call Tiny Curl, which I release under GPL v2, actually. And that is, I would say, an attempt to research the area of getting, having a different approach to releasing the code, especially in areas where the users are already using commercial code, or they're accustomed to paying for it, because it's more of a way to make them pay for a commercial license or go with the open one.
Dual licensing then.
Yes.
Okay. How does that work without a CLA?
No, it doesn't, like, but I'm the only contributor of that. So that's my code. So
yeah, and since the rest is permissive, you can still do it. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
and I would say that right now it doesn't really work, but so I'm still tried it a little bit, and I might do that even a little bit more for other commercial real-time operating systems and stuff that where the users are already in, sort of into an environment where they're paying for every component in their infrastructure anyway.
I mean, that sort of makes sense. And then since I guess you get fewer code contributors back from such an environment as well, then
and they are small and more well, as I said, this is just some attempts yet, so I haven't really explored it fully or learned much from it, but it is also I struggle with curl since I sell commercial support for curl, but curl is a very mature and old and pretty stable product. It's really hard to sell support for a very stable functioning product. Why would anyone pay for it? Sort of. Yeah. That's my response. That's what I'm getting from almost anyone I talk to. Sure, good idea, but we don't need it. It just works.
So I have a question about your thinking process, because you said you took GPL v2 for Tiny Curl. Did you think about why not V3, or what was the reason?
There's been some thinking about that, and my primary reason here is to align with other WolfSSL products. So WolfSSL as a company, we have a whole range of different libraries. They're all GPL licensed except for curl, and so we sell support for all those. So I was just trying to limit the amount of confusion to customers here.
Okay.
Learning from past mistakes.
Hopefully someday I will learn from past mistakes.
But I think we've cleared the whole licensing thing. So GPL and the MPL are broken, so you had to invent your own. But you didn't think you did. You thought you were an MIT.
Exactly. But I have to say,
result of the hackering.
But you know, one of the sort of what I really shouldn't tell you, but what's a good thing with having your own license is that it's sometimes more notable and easier to find among, you know, here's a product using a bazillion of different open source products. Are they using curl? Just the fact that it's actually different makes it easier to find curl in the
haystack. No, please don't advertise this.
That's the shittiest reason ever. But or actually, it's not a reason, but it's more of a conclusion that it actually works like that.
That's awesome.
Wait to start a flame war you won by calling the GPL broken also.
Actually, the even better way is to actually have my email address in the license. That's a better way to do it. Yeah. Just, then people are emailing me about all sorts of weird problems.
Car keys in the
car, which they do anyway.
Being able to open the car.
Yeah, and also a lot of car problems. Actually,
speaking of mature and not broken products. Software in cars.
Exactly. Yeah, that seems to be a general problem for people. Well, I guess just the fact that it's so much software in cars these days, I guess it's inevitable that it's going to be problematic.
I always find it amusing. So when going to conferences maybe 4, 5, 6 years ago, there was this graph showing how many lines of codes are in different products. And the automotive guys showed that the car is more complex than the space shuttle or one of those Boeing Dreamliners. And I mean, the Dreamliner does have software problems. Was it around batteries or something? So, I mean, it's not something to be proud of that you managed to write something even more complex.
Yeah. But I guess everything drowns in the Linux distros they have now anyway, right? So if you just have one Linux distro somewhere in the car and you have that in the Dreamliner, you had so that, yeah, that's 100 million lines of code anyway. And then if you write 10K or 100K side next to that, there's no difference.
Yeah.
So everything will end up with 100 million lines of code. Yeah. That's basically the baseline. Whatever you do, you will have 100 million lines of code, more or less.
How many lines of code is in kernel?
It's a little bit over 160K now.
And I have a question from one of our fans. Are you considering rewriting it in Rust?
Good question. I'm considering not rewriting it in any language at all other than stick to C. We're having this discussion every now and then if we should bump this C limit from C90 to C99. But we've decided to, no, not yet. We're not there yet. We're not crazy.
Wow. What features in the more modern C specs do you miss?
I think one of the...
None.
when you asked me that, I'm so used to using C90, so I'm not that used to using the modern features. So what do I miss? I don't ever use them really. But I would say naming struct fields when you initialize a struct on the stack or something, using the names for this, that's one thing. Or using dynamic sizes for arrays on when you declare them. And I think those things, maybe even using C++ style / comments. That's at least one of the things that most contributors are running into when they're contributing patches.
I mean,
people like those comments.
But if that's one of the top three killer features, that you tag the comments slightly differently, maybe it's not such a biggie.
No, but C99 isn't that different. Oh, well, declaring variables within the scope of, I mean, not in before the code, I think that is probably one of the top three as well. Mm.
So the most important question, is it Emacs or is it VI?
Is that a question? Of course it's Emacs.
Good. Burn.
And of course, with no menu bar, no toolbars, and remove everything of that and a bunch of custom key bindings.
Oh, of course.
So it's more VI-like?
Emacs file is worth millions.
Exactly, and my .emacs file has been with me since 2 decades. Sort of, I barely remember the details of it.
I have some commented out things for xEmacs, but I'm keeping it just in case.
Oh, not Lucid Emacs then.
No. I got usually students used to ask questions about what editor. If I were to start now, what would you use then? I would probably not go for Emacs, but being as productive as I am in Emacs in some other editor, I don't see that happening. But do you ever use any integrated development environment? Okay, apart from Emacs.
No. Oh. Never. Well, if someone forcing me into a corner, I could do it, but then I'm struggling all my way to get out of it and as fast as I can. like when I try to do my ports to curl to new real-time operating systems, for example, you know, whenever you go somewhere new, they all insist on running some fancy Eclipse-based weird environment for you to set it up, everything, and you just have to press a button in that GUI to build everything, and you have no idea how to reproduce that. So then I, of course, have to struggle my way out of that and get into Emacs again and a big makefile instead.
Yeah, embedded systems in these custom Emacs Eclipse distributions, that's... Will it ever go away?
No, it seems to be. I mean, I got a new one just a few months ago. So yeah, that's still sort of what they do. And they
changed the boot splash. That's sort of the takeaway.
Yeah, and use a new name for the entire thing. Now we have blah, blah. Everything is Eclipse underneath anyway.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah.
What compilers are you using?
I use GCC and Clang a little bit on and off, different things. I think I use GCC more or less daily, but then these days we have a lot of CI jobs for curl. So I've become that a little bit lazy nowadays. I don't even run all the tests myself. I just submit a pull request to GitHub, and I think we have 85 CI jobs running for every pull request. So they do a fairly good job of, you know, torturing, running a bunch of compilers, all the tools. And we run, I think, 7 static code analyzers on every pull request. So we have a lot of tools.
Do you get any reports from old, like, HPUX compilers?
Oh, yeah. We have a
deal.
Yeah, we have a wonderful community of weirdos with that. Well, you know, very often when I submit a new curl release, you know, we do curl releases every 8 weeks, and very often the first new binary packages someone provide is for MS-DOS and VMS. So that just shows you sort of what the they are actually building the bleeding edge curl for these operating systems. And I mean, they're making sure they work. So they submit patches. Maybe not specifically for HPUX, but some of those older Unixes are definitely still being used, and people are maintaining curl for those systems.
How low do you go? I mean, you have these... We spoke about Amigas and Ataris, and you have a bit of a background there as well, which is fun. I guess you're a C64 boy in there. You can't run curl, but...
Exactly.
Do you have like 16-bit support for pointer width or so on?
It's
32 and up?
It's 32 and up.
So from the 68K and onwards.
Yes.
So early 80s Macs. That's pretty strong.
Mac 9 support. Yeah, I have Mac 9 support. But when it comes to all those slightly, my words, weirdo systems... I mean, we don't verify them in the CIs or anywhere. I don't think we have any automatic build for them. So maybe we break them every once in a while. So I don't think we very rarely actually break a build for a particular platform. We just sort of, if nobody I know have it or plays with that, so we just leave it, and maybe it will continue working. Maybe we broke it inadvertently, and then later someone submits a patch to fix it again. And that's pretty much the way we do it with a lot of these platforms that we can't actually test and try and verify on a day-to-day basis.
But that's a call to action, basically. So someone with a really old 68K-based system should set up a CI node and start acting on pull requests.
Right, yeah. But you know, these really old systems, they have a problem these days in general, and that's not really curl related, but since everything is TLS these days, you can basically not use a 68K system on the web because it's too slow to do TLS handshakes until the server closes it due to inactivity. So you can basically never even connect to them because it takes too long.
That's sad.
I'm not sure it's sad, but it's more of a statement of how things have developed in the last 40 years. So.
I mean, the 68K is still my very favorite CPU. It's the last one I was not shit at writing assembler for.
So it has a beautiful assembly language, so it's easy to write assembler, yes.
And if you look at ARM assembler, that's not even made for humans anymore. It's, yeah.
Yeah, I know. Well... then talk about x86 or something.
Yeah.
Another day.
Daniel, I was looking at the tiny curl page here, And all the way down on it, license, it says TinyCurl is licensed GPL v3. So.
Oh, it says so. Okay. Then I was wrong. I don't even remember what I did.
Who cares?
License matters.
Too long ago. I'm too old now. I don't remember anything.
Okay.
But that's a good point to end that. Okay. Cares about
I don't remember how this started. Who are you guys?
How do you pronounce the other project? Is it the airs or is it cares?
That's a very good question. I wanted it to be cares. Because then
who cares is even better.
Exactly. I wanted it to be like that. Who cares? But I don't know. I rarely pronounce it because I haven't really made up my mind. And C-A-R-S or something, I don't know. So I just avoid pronouncing it. That's my solution.
You like ambiguous names, don't you? I mean, was it C-U-R-L or...
You know, names like is, you know, one of the hardest problems, right? Naming.
That's sure where everyone starts. I need a name and I need a license. Those are the hard ones. And then the code that we know.
The code is the easy part.
Awesome, but it's been great having you here. So thank you very much for taking part, and I hope to see you around some other time when we bashed you some more.
Definitely, it was fun.
Take care and have a nice summer.
Cheers. Bye.